Joe, baby, Coach Ed Ogeron, the Mellison New Tigers. And I'm up here in my truck, got that AC running. I know it's a little loud, baby, but it's hot out here in Louisiana. And something else is hot is Mellison New Tigers, baby. We whipped ass up on them them cowboys, cowgirls, you know. I mean, I ain't calling my son a girl. He good, baby, but not good enough to beat my Tigers. I know we weren't perfect. I know we're playing Bogalusa State or whatever. You know, we got to come out there, Uncle Fucky State, like your boy Belt says. You know, we got to sharpen our tools. We got to be better for the game. We got to kick more ass than a donkey. And we coming. We working on it. We looking at them crossing routes. That's what they call them. And we got to protect the quarterback. We got to run the ball better. All that stuff. It's coming. We coming. How about them Saints, baby? Good job. Old crab legs, man. They whooped ass, baby. That's Sean Payton. Know what he's doing. He's like, well, he said, you know, Winston throw too many interceptions. So what I'm going to do? As long as he's going to teach him how to throw a touchdown every time. And therefore, he ain't going to throw interceptions. He's going to throw touchdowns. You know, five passes, 130 yards, whatever. Five touchdowns. Boom, boom, boom. Done. I'm going to try to do that with Max Johnson. We'll see if it works out. But I am Coach O, bitch. I want you to listen to the Antelope. We got the Chippewas coming up. My mama, Coco Ogeron, she got a real good recipe for gumbo. I don't know what the Chippewa is, but we're going to make Chippewa gumbo. My mama going to cook it up. It's going to be good, baby. We're going to eat that W. Because I am Coach O, bitch. Go Tigers.
Warm it all up. Everything you got.
Yeah, I've asked a couple of the other older guys about this, but do you have a favorite saying that Saban has, one of his little coaching, quips he has?
There are a few I like, and he always talking about touch D's or you know, suck on D's or all that.
Yeah, yeah.
Welcome to the Sports Antidote. I'm your host, Danny Belts, episode number 66. Everyone has a plan until, we'll talk about that, .. baby, until what? Like Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. We have a lot going on when it comes to that today. A fried chicken story that's going to be tied directly into our game of the week. A loaded episode today. 4-0 last week, 9-2 on the year, out the gates running. We'll recap last week. As talking about the games to come, Nolan Arenado is getting absolutely snubbed in the MVP race. We will be discussing that objectively quickly. Nicki Minaj, are you kidding me? We have to touch base on that. Bro Exotic comes on to talk about the results of week one in his Wokasi draft. His quarterback, AOC, putting up big numbers. What a great pick by him, and he's going to win now. And who would know what a draft woker than Bro Exotic? And then Tommy Bench comes on with one of his classmates from the Naval Academy who served in Afghanistan, and he's going to come in here. We're going to ask him some Afghanistan 101 questions, and then we'll get into warp speed. Tom and I are going to break it up. I'll do my section. He'll do his section, and then we'll circle back. This is going to be great. So really, tune into this one. We prepped for it a little bit, but really, this is one of the ones I don't really want to prep too much for. I want this to be off the cuff. He knows most of the questions we're going to ask, and it's not like, you know, this is a gotcha interview, but it is going to be interesting to have a perspective from someone that fought over there, was under duress many times against Al-Qaeda, Taliban, etc., and just hearing kind of how he feels about what happened and maybe even his opinion. I'll try to keep mine out of it as best I can. I'm sure I'll probably talk a little too much, but I'm sure it's going to be great, so we've been waiting for this one for a while, so be sure and stick around. I know some people don't listen to the end of it. Some people don't listen to the beginning and listen to the end. But if you're one of those other people of the latter, then you're going to want to listen, or the former, you're going to want to listen to this interview. I can guarantee you that sight unseen, it's going to be great. Let's recap last week real quick. Okay, Western Kentucky. So Bailey Zappe now on the year has 859 yards. He's thrown for 10 touchdowns, ran for two, 74.7%. Completion percentage. This kid is an absolute stud. Looked like Army was going to run away with it, but Western Kentucky wouldn't go away. They held Army to a field goal, and they go right down the field. The back door is open, and it is wide open. They backdoor the Army. They almost got the onside kick. They lost by three. just a good, this is a good football team. And we're going to be very, they covered the six. And as you know, you have to follow us on Instagram at the Sports Analog. This is very important because we posted before the game their team total over 23.5, which went over, and they scored 5 touchdowns. Boy, it started raining in the fourth quarter. Man, these guys got hot. If this had been a 5-quarter game, Western Kentucky beats Army. Seriously. At the end, Army had no clue how to – once these guys got rolling, it took them a little bit, but whatever. I can't say that with – well, if there was 5 quarters, but seriously, if there was a couple more possessions, I'd put my money on Western Kentucky winning the game outright. And they play – they're on a bye this week. They play Indiana next week, which is very interesting for many reasons. As Western Kentucky sits on their bye, Indiana this week plays a very good Cincinnati team at home. They're a 4-point dog at home. Then they play Western Kentucky. And then after that, Indiana plays Penn State on the road. This is called a sandwich game. This is, as Rick Shaw says, Sandwich City. Rick Shaw. He's gonna. This guy's digging up the great information still. But, sorry. So in this instance, he was correct that this is going to be a sandwich game. Very much going to be watching Indiana-Cincinnati. If this total, if Indiana struggles to score and this total's low, mid-50s, we're going to be slamming the over. Western Kentucky overs is where we may be leaning. However, we don't know if their defense is that bad yet because they played an FCS team they didn't really care about. And then they played the Army, who can nearly move the football on any team in their weight class when they're executing their blocks. So I'm not throwing them in the dumpster yet as a bad defense, but it looks to be offense is certainly going to be their strength. The Cowboys, +8.5, Lock City. They should have won the game. Missed 2 field goals, albeit one was a 60-yarder. He missed an extra point. Dallas probably should have won the game outright. A horrific no-call when the Bucs push off, driving down for a game-winning field goal. It was offensive pass interference, blatant offensive pass interference. It never gets called. It never gets called. And then the people say, well, you can't call that in that spot. I hate when I hear that. If it's traveling, it's traveling. You call it. And the game 7 of the championship on the last possession, if he walked, he walked. You know, if you carry, you carry. In baseball, if you're out, you're out. There's no, you can't call that here. Yes, you can. You're damn right. You and you call offensive pass interference, just like you call defensive pass interference in the fucking NFC championship against, never mind. We all know how that ended. So Dallas was a lock, and then UNC, Georgia State's coach before the game, got them all fired up. You can look at these videos. He's like, ripped the helmet off one of his kids. Everyone's all fired up, and UNC's looking at this like, oh, okay. That coach couldn't have helped me more because UNC just piled on points, never in jeopardy. A very easy cover. They won by 40-something, I think. What a great week, and what a great year so far. 9-2 out the gate. This Nicki Minaj thing is wild. I know most of you know the point of the story. She had a tweet about her brother-in-law or something or other not getting unvaccinated because it made him, he's made his balls swell up and he became impotent or something. A marriage got broken off. The details don't matter. But what matters is the last sentence in that tweet where she basically says, don't let people think for you. Ask questions. A normal thing. And boy, the left turned on her so quick. It was just a month ago. Her and Candace Owens, or maybe a little longer ago, were going at it on Twitter. It was hilarious, Instagram and Twitter. And now, all of a sudden, the wokey of the woke, the one that's scissoring some other chick on stage at an awards ceremony that nobody watches, now she even said, can you not see what's happening, people? I mean, this is like red pill type stuff. Belts, no, it's not. Yes, it is. Because she sees how easy it is when you have an opinion that is not in the ranks or in the liking of the cancel culture wokest of the woke, how fast you are thrown under the bus. This is just hilarious. And she is now reaping what she's sown. I don't feel bad for her at all. I think she said the right thing, but I don't feel bad that she might get canceled. They're coming after her hardcore. On the news, MSNBC. CNN's out, ESPN had their, of course they have an opinion, and yes, they'll cuck, per usual. But that was just hilarious. Had to go noted. And then of course, we have a general cuck, who apparently is telling China if we invade, well then, you know, we'll let you know we're coming. Well, to have him be white bitch of the week would just be too easy. So I have a better one for you. As we get into that, after we get into this stuff. So, everyone has a plan until. You know, I personally know what it's like to get ready for. I've only been in a handful of air quotes, boxing matches officiated. But one time in particular, my first one, when I really got smoked, even with headgear on, this story isn't exactly the longest or the best, but I just remember, this is before I even heard that quote, I just remember that everything for the last weeks, previous weeks we had trained for were out the window because I got my bell rung, which was a mainstay in any time I fight. But it just, I just remember when I heard that quote after the fact, like, yeah, no, Mike Tyson has some gems, and that is probably the best one aside from I want your heart, I'll eat your kids, praise be to Allah, and then he walked off. That was pretty hot. But anyway. A better example of just what I'm trying to say is that they say third time's a charm, right? And in sports and in life, sometimes the third chance is the last chance, but sometimes you're given two. I have two examples for you. I'm going to start off with a sports example, and then we'll tie that into a fried chicken example, and then we'll get into the play of the week. So, in 2017, the New Orleans Saints had just come off two back-to-back 7-9 seasons, and people were getting a little disgruntled. They were losing at home. The defense was terrible. We had a coaching carousel amongst the assistant ranks. I mean, it was bizarre. Inconsistency galore. Go ahead and beat a great team, then you lose at home to, like, the Lions or something stupid. Just ridiculous. And in 2017, it appeared to be Peyton was nearing the hot seat. Not saying he was on it, but he was nearing it because if you have a third losing season in a row with all this talent, it's not a good look, even for Sean Payton. And in that season, they opened up at Minnesota, a very big rival of New Orleans now over the past decade. God, I hate them more than any team in football. But we played Minnesota. Week one, national television, Saturday night. That's where I met Dr. T. Shout out to Dr. T. Did a great job a couple weeks ago. We'll have him back on. And the narrative was the Saints are going to use Adrian Peterson against him. They had just acquired Adrian Peterson, and now he's like, oh, he's back in football. He's going to be angry. Well, that didn't really happen. He got the ball a few times. Nothing happened. The Vikings dominated that game, the entire football game, and then Adrian Peterson was basically let go a month later, and I think he went to the Cardinals or something. I don't know. But or the Redskins, I think. I really don't know. Don't care. But I know that the Saints, again, get embarrassed 0-1. The Patriots had also lost their opener. Very rare that the Patriots would do that. So they've never started off 0-2 in the history of the Belichick-Brady era, and they certainly would not do it against the New Orleans Saints, as the Patriots ran the Saints right out the gym. As a matter of fact, the score in the second quarter was so bad, about 20,000 people had already left the Superdome. The boos were loud. They were ongoing, and it was apparent that there was a big problem in New Orleans. And this is it. Who's the third game? You got to go to the predicted division winner who had just come off another 13-game season, the Carolina Panthers, who were full head of steam. We hadn't beaten them over there in God knows how long. It's been a good bit, particularly in that run the Panthers had right around this time era, this time, point in time in sports and football. So basically, the Saints, this is it. They're already talking about it. If the Saints lose this game, the season is over. It's over. Only like 15 teams have started 0-3 and went to the playoffs, and that's only because of an anomaly, because it just so happened that that side of the division, whether or the conference, whether it be the AFC or the NFC, was just so damn bad that you could sneak in a wild card at 9-7. But the NFC wasn't like that this year. You were going to have to win at least 10 to maybe 11 games to get into the playoffs, and that would prove to be right, and I'll tell you what happened. So Peyton had this speech where basically he just said, this is it. You know, it was kind of kind of that Any Given Sunday speech, you know. I heard it was pretty crazy. One of the reporters, no one could record it, but some of the beat writers said it was pretty ridiculous. And he just said, I'm coaching for my life. We're coaching for the season. You're coaching for your contracts. We cannot have three losing seasons. And he didn't pass anything on to them, but he just said, let's get out there and kick the shit out of these guys, is how he ended it. And, I mean, the Saints are almost a 9-point dog. They're coming off embarrassing losses. And wouldn't you know it, they rose to the occasion and they stuck the Panthers right between the eyes. They dominated the game from start to finish, and they ended up reviving their season after losing the first two games, rip off eight games in a row, and finish the season 11-5 and they slid into the playoffs because the Falcons had 14 wins, which is also the year they played the Patriots in the Super Bowl. We all remember that. But 11 wins was good enough to get into the playoffs, and they revived the season. Since then, they have not missed the playoffs and have basically won the NFC South every single year, all because of that one stupid Panthers game. If they lose that game, nothing happens. There's no end. I mean, they never won a Super Bowl, but there's no none of these consecutive 13-win seasons for how many straight division titles? Four or five? I lost count. None of that happens if they don't rise to the occasion. Because there is no – the strike three, you're out thing, is that plays here big time. A long time ago, there was a restaurateur right here from New Orleans, from the St. Thomas Projects, a white boy. Came from absolutely nothing. Arguably one of the greatest American success stories in the history of American success stories. I mean, to scale, it's up there with like Bill Gates and Apple in the garage. Because this kid literally came from nothing. We'll get into who this is and what the concept is in a minute. It's really not that important. But what's important is that he also would have three shots. And he missed on the first two, but he hit the third one hard, just like the Saints did. And just like a certain team in college football will have their opportunity to do Saturday afternoon, I won't say where yet. So in 1971, a fried chicken concept called Chicken on the Run was put in place by this man who, again, came from nowhere. Now, the problem with Chicken on the Run was it wasn't branded correctly, and he hadn't quite got his recipe down yet. A recipe now that is as proprietary as Afghanistan. It's as proprietary as any, you know, information and technology that we have in Afghanistan. Oh, wait, never mind. It's not too proprietal anymore, is it? No, not really. Those guys are playing with the drones right now. Unbelievable. I'll save that for the interview with JR. But anyway, so in this instance, it just wasn't branded correctly. You'd be surprised how not naming a restaurant correctly plays. If you ever watch Bar Rescue with John Tapper, say what you want about him. He's a genius. He's awesome dude. I shook hands with him once. Awesome guy. And I've never heard anyone say a bad word about him. Everyone seems to like him. But he is definitely right when he's always changing the name of these bars because they're just not named correctly. You don't even realize subliminally when you see a place and the name, you don't even realize if the name turns you off, you don't even go. They've done studies on this with branding things, the wrong name, you know? And in that instance, because of that, this was failing, amongst other things. But he lost about 20 grand about 7 months in, and he was going to shut this whole thing down, and he had an idea. I'm going to change the name. I'm going to change the name to something else. And he changed the name to something else, but he had another problem too. Someone suggested that the oil he was using to fry the chicken wasn't exactly what he should be doing. He suggested you should go old school and use block shortening. I used to be a connoisseur of cooking oil, for those of you who know what I did in my previous sales job. But in this case, block shortening is old school. You know, you don't take a jug of canola oil, pour it in the fryer. You literally cut the lard off of a block and throw it in the fryer. Way worse for you, but makes your chicken taste a lot better. He opted to go with that, which they still do today. So does Buffalo Wild Wings and a few other franchises with block shortening. But the big thing is he changed the name from Popeye's Mighty Good Fried Chicken to just Popeye's. You ever heard of him? In 1972, New Orleans' finest, as far as I'm concerned, say what you want about him, Al Copeland, in Araby, Louisiana, a city right outside of New Orleans, and working hard in St. Bernard Parish, not far from Chalmette, best people in the world. He opened it up there, and from there, this restaurant took off from a full sprint, and the things that happened after that were unbelievable. The spicy blend that he had, proprietary, he nailed it. This is the first time people have had spicy fried chicken, trademarked the buttermilk biscuit. All of these things just took this to a roll, started franchising. Years later in the greater Baton Rouge area, there was a Popeye's like Subway's on every street corner, and they were packed. because people like this spicy fried chicken. Everybody wanted that recipe, but I ain't getting that. March of 1989, they bought out their biggest competition next to KFC Church's Chicken, which would actually prove to be a giant mistake. But that didn't stop his success in many other ways. We'll get to Al Copeland in 1 second. But they ran it under the parent Al Copeland Enterprises, and they kept these things separate. Churches would go bankrupt. You never want to do this unless you really know what you're doing. Copeland wasn't the best businessman, albeit he made a crap ton of money before he died in 2008. Yes, they did go to bankruptcy court because of the church's merger. However, he still made out like a bandit when it was all said and done, and he was able to take all the trademark patented stuff with him and keep all the... He didn't have to disclose the recipe to the parent that came in and bought it. It's very interesting. So now they had to buy that stuff from him, and they bought... Right now, it's... God, what's it called? I should have wrote that down. Diverse Foods, that concept sells still right now. The proprietary mix and all the other ingredients for Popeyes that they have to buy. So even though he lost on the merger, he still made out like a bandit. Copeland was very controversial. I mean, they said as fat he for every friend he had, he made five enemies. I mean, he was public drunk, which I have no problem with. He would brawl. He was a fighter, which I have absolutely no problem with, except he apparently could really fight. He was pretty swole. He put on the biggest Christmas display you've ever seen at his house right on Lake Pontchartrain. Lines would back up miles just to come see this elaborate freaking setup this dude had. He had a Christmas party every year. My buddy was always in there catering. He tipped everybody like 500 smokes, let them leave with bottles of wine and champagne. He's very generous. I know a lot of stories about this dude that I can't say on this podcast. My favorite one is, now, we don't know this 100% true. My friend's dad swears it's true, but one day Copeland's pulling into Schwegman's. That's an old grocery store here, and this dude, he's about to pull up to this parking spot in the front, and this dude kind of pulls in with a little Miata or something like that, a little right in front of him, takes the spot, looks at him and says, "You got to be fast to do that," walks in Schwegman's. Well, Copeland is the absolute wrong person to say that to. So he takes the Panzer tank that he's driving, basically, backs it up and rams it into this thing, smashes the car into a sardine can, back and forth, reverse, forward, boom, boom, pounds it like a punching bag. When this dude comes out from the grocery store, Copeland's standing outside of his truck, just staring at the, smiling at just the damage here. The dude looks at him, and Copeland looks at him and says, "Yeah, you got to be rich to do that." Remember, he said you got to be fast to do that, and he came back with, "You got to be rich to do that." Normally, you'd say that story's bullshit, but with the history of this guy, I totally believe it. It was the Schwegmans that used to be right there on Power Boulevard in Kenner, right before you jumped the bridge. Oh, man, that is insane. But needless to say, had he missed on that third time, that would have been it. I mean, you can't all get – everyone acts like the Thomas Edison story. Well, if he wouldn't have tried for the 18,425,000th time to make the light bulb, yeah, I get that. But he was afforded all that because that dude didn't have no job. He was just sitting there looking at a light bulb all day, fixing it. Him and Tesla in the race. Way smarter than me. I don't know how to make a light bulb, do you? But I tell you this, I mean, it still was amazingly impressive to change the name, to simplify the name after you missed again, and then to change the way that you, the most important thing in, if anything fried, is your batter and the oil you're using it with. And I can tell you that. And if you're filtering it or not. I'll stop right there. Get through flashbacks of that job. Great people, though. I still talk to a lot of them. Pretty good company. And there are a couple of them I know are listening to this now. So shout out to RT. You guys are fine. So what's that, Bell? What's it have to do with anything? I'm so glad you asked. That if this guy would not have cracked the code on the third one, there would be no, I firmly believe he would have been broke. There would be no enterprise that would be Popeye's Fried Chicken. Have you kept it Popeye's Mighty Good Fried Chicken? It's too long. What do you need all that for? Just simplify. Keep it simple, stupid. And he did. And he was wildly successful because of that. If the Saints had lost to the Panthers, I'm telling you, that's it. That's it. That season is a bust. Peyton is gone. God knows what happens to, I think Breeze was on a contract. God knows what happens. But they came through. And this team, they're going to have to come through. You lose your first game on national television against the top 10 team in overtime. And then the next week, when you were sleeping on one of the more unbelievable plays I've ever seen, a walk-off touchdown of about 70 yards on some crazy Hail Mary that should have never happened. There's been better days in Tallahassee. Way better days. This is looking like they're about to right the ship in week one. This team will now be battling for their life in week three. And if they lose this game to Wake Forest, if they lose this game, their season is over. And now the coaching carousel will begin to warm up again because Norv will be on the hot seat. They just lost to Jacksonville State on a walk-off touchdown. It was ridiculous. It was wild. It was absurd. Still don't know how this happens, but it does. Apparently every other year, people don't understand on the last play of the game, you should rush three or even two. Drop eight or nine. I don't know, but whatever. Put them in place. How does he get ahead of the safety? It's incredible. So surely a Wake Forest team that's 2-0, surely Florida State would go there and they would probably be a big dog. Well, typically I would say that that's correct. And it is right now. However, if they had won the first two games, they'd probably be favored over there. So it's interesting, is all. One thing I like to do is go on the message boards. Rick Shaw lives on the message boards. This is just... You kind of get a feel for how things are going when you get... And you'd be shocked. But when fan bases seem to be extremely confident or even underconfident or a fake confident is what I call it, you typically can kind of pick up on that. And in this instance, Wake Forest message board just screams weakness to me. Now, I'm not basing my pick off that. I'm basing it off the situation. The situation where a team was going to open up their season by, albeit an overrated Notre Dame team, should have probably beat them in overtime. Go down 38-20, come storming back to force overtime and had a hiccup in OT. A bunch of errant plays versus Jacksonville State. They turned it over so many times. McKenzie looked terrible. I mean, I've seen this before. I saw this with LSU. LSU lost to Troy at home. And with all the controversy between the coaching staff, between Matt Canada, Coach O, they have to go play our true rival, Florida, in Gainesville. And the line opens up, and I'm like, wait, what? Florida should be a 10-point favorite. No, LSU was favored in that game, and everybody went nuts taking Florida, and LSU would beat Florida in a crazy game out there few years ago. My point being is very simple, is I've seen this before. Maybe I'll beat it at a different scale. We've seen it before. You can't be scared to look at Florida State here. The question then becomes, Belts, well, do you think they're going to fold? Do you think this is it? I've heard some good things. The beat writers are talking good about what's going on. They've had some solid practices, and they understand their season's not over. You're still in a very weak ACC, extremely weak ACC. I mean, don't... Watch Georgia Tech give Clemson a game, I'm telling you, even though they lost. We'll get into that a few weeks later for the futures report card. But you can't be scared in this case to take that peek at Florida State. They opened up at 6.5. They're getting 6.5 at Wake Forest. The public slams Wake Forest. And yet the line goes to 6 to 5.5. Now it sits at 5. 5 is also the goofiest line in football. It's a line that hardly ever lands on. You'll land on 9 more than 5. 5 is just like, it's like double zero on a roulette table. Not that that's any different than any other number on the roulette table. That was a pretty bad example. My point is that it's a weird number. A dog, you should always be looking at it at 5, especially when it opens at 5, but let's not go on that road yet. So, here we have Florida State catching 5 over there with the chance to salvage their season. Now, what are they going to do? They're going to pull New Orleans Saints, go in there and wreck Carolina on the road. Ironically, those schools in the same state. Something to think about. Are they going to fold and end their season now? Are they going to do what they have to do with their failing restaurant to make it one of the more successful chains? Florida State used to be Popeyes. Shit. They were a national... we did a whole thing on them with Bowden. Top 5 finishes for like 2 straight decades or something outrageous. You can't be scared to take games like this. You gotta look this game in the eye, and you gotta say, and I'm coming, and coming we are, because we're taking Florida State getting the 5, and we're taking them outright, on the record, the money line, plus 165, it's more than that, we'll post it on Instagram. Florida State goes in there and wins by 3 touchdowns. They have 3 times the talent. I don't care what happened versus Jacksonville State, give me Florida State. They've already been hitting the mouth. What's the game plan now? I think they stay on their feet. I think they finish the fight. I think they end up in a bowl game. I'm setting myself up to look really stupid or really smart, but that's okay because I'm Danny Belts, and I ain't that smart anyway. Give me Florida State in another game. Interestingly enough, I try to stay away from these games, but I can't help it. Thursday night football. When's the last time I've really gotten on that? Maybe once or twice a year? Let's review this game. There's two of them. I need the Cajuns to beat Ohio. They barely freaking beat Nicholls State. Not looking too smart on that future yet, but anyway. Louisville is going to square off versus UCF. UCF out the gate scoring a ton of points. Crazy game versus Boise. They played a nobody last week, but their quarterback, Dylan Gabriel, stud. 12 carries for 64 yards against Boise. 3-18, 4 touchdowns. He threw a couple picks. He's going to be facing off on the other side versus Randall Cunningham's kid. For Louisville, a pretty scary quarterback himself. I looked at the total, opened at 65, shot up to 68. This seems pretty, I don't know, square. I can't believe I'm doing this, but I just do not think any team will be able to stop anyone in this matchup. So give me Louisville over the 68 points versus UCF. There's a couple more games of note. Georgia State versus Charlotte. Georgia State just got embarrassed. They're 0-2, embarrassed by Army, embarrassed by North Carolina. Their coach is an idiot. Charlotte beats Duke. Charlotte's on the way to win 3-0 for the first time since they've been in the FBS. And the line opens up at 2.5. Georgia State's a favorite? What? And it shoots up to 4.5? How is that possible when Charlotte beat a team in the ACC and this team can't stop the Army who's still running on them? I don't know, but it stinks. I'm leaning towards Georgia Tech. We need more information. This is why we're going to update the Instagram page. We'll have probably an FCS playing an FBS team as well. We would have had Tulane last week, but I forgot to post. Be sure and check the Instagram page at the Sports Antidote. Florida State plus the 5. Louisville over the 68. And keep your eye out for Georgia State and check the Instagram page.
All right, you white bitch. Give me some chon-chon.
Stay away from me.
Give me some chon-chon.
You got the money?
Give me some chon-chon.
Okay.
I mean, it's easy to go after General Cuck, but it's easier to go after the people that are defending him, which is that's where I'm steering right now. I don't think there's a moral fiber left in Wolf Blitzer's bloodstream. And this guy may be the biggest cuck on the planet. With a name like Wolf Blitzer, which is one of the coolest names ever, you need to be like tough. I don't know. And you can't be all like lumpy and looking like an idiot all the time and just always like aghast. Like, oh, I can't believe it. The Situation Room is a shitty show. Nobody watches it. No one cares. And this dude has the audacity to already be the first one to go, I don't see what the big deal is. China is our enemy, but now he's made them an ally. China will never be our ally, you idiot. Ally? What type of Kool-Aid? What? The China Kool-Aid, I know the NBA takes a bath in it, but holy mow, ally. Wolfie, you made it easy. And because this is your second time being nominated for White Bitch of the Week, you will be the 20th person with myself at the awards banquet mid-December for White Bitch of the Year. And boy, I tell you, after that statement, you just became a front runner. I mean, you just move way up there. You're up there with Gavin Newsom. That's a big one. You're up there with Mitt Romney. You're up there with Leo DiCaprio. You see where I'm going? The GM of the Buffalo Bills. Cuck, you're up there with him. Anyway, you get the point. Wolf Blitzer, you are White Bitch of the Week, and you are nominated for White Bitch of the Year. We'll see you then. The Onion Ring. Where even fiction is reality. Everything on here is a fact. With guest host, Bro Exotic, Super Woke. Bro Exotic, jumping back on the Sports Antidote. What's going on there, pal?
What's going on, dude? Bro Exotic, Woke Cardinal of Cal, Church of Woke, second in command. What's going on, dude?
Sick. Dude, nothing. I know it's been kind of spotty with the hurricane, which obviously was a product of global warming, probably a product Donald Trump probably had that hurricane machine in full force, despite the Democrat Louisiana governor, I'm hearing.
Yeah, And all of you racists will say it's due to China and India, but no, it's us, dude. It's white people. We're evil.
We all know
it. We need to be exterminated.
Yes, we do. And the minute that you off yourself, I'll consider doing the same to me. But until then, I guess we'll keep having you on the show. Dude, the Wokensy draft, not to be confused with the fantasy draft. We know who you had last week. Let's recap your points in society, your societal Wokensy points. Can we go through kind of what happened?
Absolutely, man. Had a capital week last week, dude. So started quarterback Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And you know what? Well, I had a lot of flack for picking her up, dude, because honestly, she doesn't even listen to Kosi too well. I thought there'd be, you know, some tension going into the season, but you know, she marches to the beat of her own drum, dude, or you know, sometimes the drum that Elizabeth Warren is drumming after a rain dance or something. But she definitely does not, you know, go too well with Coach Pelosi. So I don't know. It was a big, you know, risk taking her up, dude. But dude, last week, dude, she had an away game at the Met Gala. And she put up 30 points, dude. She really pissed off the home crowd wearing a Tax the Rich dress at a gala that cost $30,000 plus to get into. So she pissed off a lot of rich people at the home team, dude. I was really impressed. Put up great
numbers. Yeah, it should be. When it was all said and done, it was actually $36,520 to when you add in everything else. Because you can't just buy the – they say $30,000 for the ticket, but there's all kind of other like add-ons. It's kind of like, you know, getting upsold in a restaurant. But I bet she must have ran wild for you, and she goes kind of rogue. Like, you know, I feel like she calls her own number, and you're going to score a lot of points with AOC this year for sure.
She really is, dude. She has a really good defense too. As a matter of fact, it's the Church of Wokes retaining a lawyer as Chick-fil-A is suing her for the rights to that dress. But anyway,
yeah. That did look like a Chick-fil-A bag. Definitely did. Who else scored?
So moving on. So running back Greta Thunberg, dude, she ran so much last week that she actually ran from climate change to abortion. She tweeted about the new Texas abortion laws. And let's pull up the tweet here. The tweet is, and this is out of 100, personal choice at 60%, a blunt expletive, fuck off at 22%. With not your concern at 10% and mind your own business at 8%. So she went really well at running to different controversial topics there. She did that splendidly. On the wide receiver, dude, I had to bench Kamala.
Wait, before you run, though, can I just say one thing about her?
Absolutely, dude.
Your Church of Wokes greatest hits. Did you like the Greta Thunberg?
My ringtone. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it should be. And good for you. Okay. Absolutely. We said so,
Kamala Harris. So wide receiver, dude. So Kamala had been doing so well. She's a veteran in previous seasons. You know, she just received this vice presidency, which, you know, really no significance on her own. She just kind of received it and ran with it. I didn't think she'd have a strong week this week, so I had to bench her for Gavin Newsom because, as I predicted, I mean, I knew he'd have a comeback week receiving governorship in this recall election. Dude, really put up great numbers for us, so that was great. Our Tomahawk expert, Elizabeth Warren, she had a solid week as she asked the Fed to break up with Wells Fargo. So, and she actually did so with the hand gesture of a tomahawk to really emphasize the breakup of Fed and Wells Fargo. Great numbers there.
Is that not a cultural appropriation for her to do that, though? Oh, wait, never mind. She can do that. She's an Indian.
She's a Native American. Stop being racist. Check your privilege, bro.
Moving on to special teams
and defense. We had Jen Psaki, dude, put up a great defense for General Milley. What Fox News calls a treasonous act. I mean, she quickly brought...
Oh, wait, bro, Exotic, man. I hate to jump in again, but you know that you can pick up Milley on the waiver wire right now. Did you know that? You may want to look into that.
Well, yeah. I mean, only because of the defense that Jen Psaki provided for him. And she's on... that's my special teams in defense. It's Jen Psaki. So, like, she defended Milley, and what Fox News would call treasonous. But and she her defense was she was quickly to bring up the insurrection that quickly blocked the rest from seeing a game-changing penalty. But as of now, there's no flag on the play. So looks like Millie's in the clear, all due to Salky's defense, dude. Really putting up nice. And then last but not least, dude, my prized veteran kicker, Joe Biden. you know, really underwhelming.
How do you have this all-star team? How many people are in the draft? Two?
I mean, dude, Church Woke draft is pretty deep, dude. I'm looking at number one, dude. I clearly busted out the water in all categories. So many points here, dude. But, I mean, those are all great. But, like, to my misfortune, underwhelming kicker, Joe Biden, he didn't really do too much this last week. He did kick an extra point game winner in the fourth quarter for Gavin Newsom. That worked out really well. But, you know, just an underwhelming week for him, you know. But he did come up with a huge game winner, and that really perpetuated this winning week for us.
That's excellent. We'll be tracking this weekly. I did hear – we'll talk about – and I have to run. I'm sorry. But we'll talk about Buss. I did hear that the woke Pope, after Nicki Minaj's feud with Candace Owens, drafted Nicki Minaj first in the Wokency draft. And, man, what a bust.
What a bust, dude. No, what an absolute bust.
She just tore both ACLs. It looks like she's unwokening right now as we speak. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I mean,
first-round pick. Terrible pick.
I mean, me and some of the woke bishops were, you know, all saying after the draft, dude, you know, like, I don't want to be mean or whatever to woke Pope. You can't tell him in front of his face, dude, but it's like he drafted woke Jamarcus Russell's. I don't know how you're going to come back from this one, dude. You know, but that's
right between, you know. She's not speaking your language right now, brother. She retweeted Tucker Carlson doing a video on her. And that got her kicked off Twitter in Twitter jail. Oh, it's great. You wokies, you guys are the best. All right, bro, we got to run.
She's good. Next year, she looks like a prime pick for the MAGA draft, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what a bad first pick there. All right, buddy. Well, look, man, thanks for jumping in. Anything you want to close with?
All right, man. Yeah, y'all can follow me on Instagram, Broexotic, Breaux Exotic. And no joke, stay woke, bro.
Stay woke, chief.
All right, cheers, dude.
Broexotic always nailing it. Wokacy draft. How ridiculous is that? It just doesn't get much better. It's not better than Buffalo Riot Wings, but that's pretty cool. I bet that they do their draft in Buffalo Riot Wings. That's the only way that would work. Let's bring on the much anticipated Tommy Bench, former Marine. JR, former Marine. Let's get this Afghanistan interview going. I'm pulling no punches. I'm throwing curveballs. Forget this. Yeah, right.
Tommy Bench joins the Sports Analyst with a classmate of his from the Naval Academy, JR. As we all know, Mr. Bench went to Iraq a couple times, the Big Sandbox, as well as Haiti on some tsunami relief. But JR had the distinct privilege of going to Afghanistan. And if you haven't lived in a cave, clearly we have had some news coming out of Afghanistan. A lot of reasons. A lot of questions. There's a big reason why JR is coming on here. He has a lot to say. We have a lot of questions to ask. And before we even say anything, this is not to hedge anything politically. This is an objective interview. We're asking just basic questions because I feel most people have no clue why we're Afghanistan and what we're trying to do. And the fake news out there is just rampant. So anyway, first off, we'll start. Tommy Bench, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good. Happy to be here, pal.
Good. I know that was a long intro there, but it had to be said because some people don't listen to previous episodes, didn't. JR was coming on. But JR, how you doing there, buddy?
Doing great, boys. Great to be on with y'all. You know, first time, long time.
I hear you. And thank you both for your service. I know that sounds ridiculous, but because most people – it's not ridiculous, but I think – did you say one time, Bench, like you shouldn't thank anyone in the uniform for the service because they could have been peeling onions or something?
Yeah. Well, you never know. It's like, you know, Bill Burr and the people getting on the airplane like, hey, did that guy really – did he see combat or did he just get out of boot camp? Yeah. Yeah. That's all right. But thank you.
You guys both were under fire. I've heard both these sides of the stories. Not much from Afghanistan, so here we are. So, JR, let me go ahead and start this off real quick. So let's start off with just Afghanistan 101. And I know that some people are going to be rolling their eyes, but to our audience, I feel, again, and I'll reiterate, I don't think people understood exactly why we were there or the direct reason why. They may know kind of some spinoffs of, well, we had to get there to stop Al-Qaeda from growing, but at the same time, you know, in the post 9/11 era, we get that part. But go ahead and just in like a minute or two, can you just start with like explaining to a fifth grader why we were in Afghanistan?
Yeah, absolutely, Danny. So, I mean, first of all, most obviously, look, turn the clock back 20 years ago to September 11th, 2001. So pretty quickly, you know, we were able to trace this directly to Al-Qaeda. I think, frankly, you know, folks in the CIA, folks in the Pentagon, as soon as they saw that second plane flying towards the tower, Al-Qaeda, you know, was top of mind to them. So really the first phase of our operations in Afghanistan back then were, you know, directly against Al-Qaeda, which was the governing regime of Afghanistan at that time. You know, very clearly gave material support and provided refuge to not just Al-Qaeda, but Osama bin Laden himself. So within a few weeks of September 11th, 2001, in the month of October, I believe, not only Army Special Forces and CIA on the ground, but also a Marine Expeditionary Unit in the south of the country. So pretty clearly early on, all our efforts were specifically targeted towards Al-Qaeda in eliminating that threat. But as we, you know, thought about the war on terror more, we didn't just want to eliminate that. We wanted to prevent the Taliban's ability to ever provide a refuge to Al-Qaeda or to a similar group in the future. And so that's what, you know, much of the rest of the history in Afghanistan was. It was learning about...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Learning about not just Al-Qaeda, but get and going after them, as well as building up the Afghan government's ability to kind of function without us.
Got it. Okay, that's pretty spot on there. I mean, you know, more than us, but that's kind of what I thought, but very well said. So let's go ahead and fast forward. That was the primary initiative when we got there in 2001 under the Bush administration. And then when did you first go to that country? What year, what month, what are we looking at?
So I spent most of 2009 in Afghanistan as part of our major offensive there.
So was there any, 2009, you know, before that, a pretty huge presidential election. Was there any more pressure, less pressure under the Obama administration compared to the previous administration with your duties there? Was everything pretty much status quo as far as it goes with what was expected?
I think it was fairly status quo. I mean, we had seen in Iraq, you know, Tommy Bench and his crew as part of the surge there. I had some pretty great success. So you had President Obama same in Afghanistan. Yeah. So there was some urgency because we knew we didn't have forever to get the job done.
So, you know, I could, as we do have, we always, you know, limited time. I know you have limited time. I want to get into a few things, but before we, maybe we'll circle back to that at the end, but talk to me about what's going on here recently. And then I'm sure Tommy Bench will jump in, you know, in the interval of all the things in the middle that I just have no, I can't even imagine what to ask you, but he does. But you knew, you have had to have known some people that have been stationed there, or maybe your translator, people that were left there during this absolute unbelievable debacle, almost of a movie caliber type. But we haven't spoke much about this, but you did know people that were there. Have you spoke to them since? What's the scope? What does that look like?
Yeah, absolutely, Danny. I mean, you, in a word, it's a mess. But you hit the nail on the head. I had two translators. We called them interpreters. Who worked kind of hand in glove with me with everything I did over there. They had my total trust. By the end of my day, you know, I cared about them as much as I cared about any of my Marines. And so we stayed in close touch over kind of the years as they passed. Thankfully, both of those guys were able to come to the United States. You know, I think the last one got here in 2016. But two things about these guys. So the first one is kind of a knucklehead. And he actually, despite living in Fredericksburg, Virginia for the last 5 years, decided that it would be a good time, you know, sometime this summer to take a vacation to his home in Kabul. And so he and his kids got back to the States by the skin of their teeth. You may have seen this iconic picture of an Air Force cargo jet with over 800 people on it. Well, this guy was there. He was on that aircraft with his family. And so the other one is back in the States as well, but his extended family is still in the city there in Kabul. One night after the city had fallen, he woke up and saw that their house was marked by the Taliban. And so their whole neighborhood, anyone who works with the U.S. or who was an officer in the Afghan army had their house marked. So they got out of Dodge and tried to get into Pakistan. But Pakistan all of a sudden is actually able to control their border. So I've been working with him and continue working with him on trying to get his family to some place of safety, which is anywhere other than Afghanistan.
What an unbelievable time to go on vacation. That'd kind of be like, you know, you fly into Hawaii on, I don't know, right around December 5th, 1941, looking for a nice long weekend or something, and a couple days later. Yeah, that's pretty insane. So, look, I do have one last question before Tommy Beck jumps in. And this isn't, again, we're not trying to drive. You know what? I'm going to pull back on that because I know that he'll get into that. But I do have one question. The caliber of fighter that you saw over there, you know, I've read conflicting things. I've read, you know, 8th century, you know, MOABs, basically just, you know, they got nothing. I've read they were strategically, you know, great. It's kind of like the Viet Cong. I've read both on them. What was the enemy like over there? I know this is a really dumb question. I don't know how to phrase it, but was the enemy a formidable opponent because of the terrain, or was it just because we weren't allowing you to bomb them out of existence? Does that question make sense? Because I've always kind of wondered why we couldn't.
100%. So the area I was in was pretty interesting. You know, to answer your question just briefly, you know, working with what they had. And they weren't dumb, so they avoided, you know, fighting us in a way that played to our strength. But I'll tell you, in my deployment, so we took over in an area that previous to us was run by just one British platoon of about 40 people. And we rolled in with, you know, 1,500 plus Marines. And it took the Taliban there about 6 weeks to realize they couldn't fight us the way they used to fight the British. So they actually did square off with us for a few weeks there and learned very quickly that was a bad idea.
Yeah, I would say as much. So as we kind of went on that full circle there, the stuff I wanted to do on, like, you know, what's going on here, Afghan 101. Bench, why don't you jump on here and you can get into the more, but try to speak in, you know, normal vernacular because we all didn't serve in the military, but I think you know what to do.
I got you here. So, JR, first of all, great to have you on the program. Here, little inside joke between JR and I there. as Mr. Belts pointed out, you know, I went to Iraq, you went to Afghanistan. I'm not saying I'm solely responsible, but the country I went to is still somewhat of a functioning democracy. Just saying, just throwing that.
More board.
But yeah. But all right, so give us a little bit. I won't say day in the life, like, you know, what time did you wake up in the morning? But just give us a couple minutes on your general experience, Afghanistan, 2009, you know, was it, you know, grenades and mortars every day? Was it, you know, sporadic interactions with the locals? Just kind of talk to us about that so we can get a sense, get a flavor of what it was like for you, boots on the deck, 2009 Afghanistan.
Yes, I'll tell you, originally my unit was supposed to be one of the last in Iraq. And so at the time, not much was going on. So I had all these great plans to, you know, get in better shape, bench press 350 pounds, and, you know, quit chewing tobacco and all this. And then one day I was out at the range. My battalion commander came out to me and said, JR, you'll hear this officially, but just so you know, there's a change of mission. We're going to Helmand Province. And as soon as he said that, I was like, well, I'm not going to quit chewing tobacco quite yet. So I'll just say, you know, I kind of described the first 6 weeks already. You know, it's pretty kinetic. It was an enemy that, you know, didn't know yet that it was a bad idea to kind of meet us face to face.
Let me just throw out kinetic for our civilian folks. Kinetic means rounds going both ways, shooting matches with the enemy.
That's right. You know, so fairly aggressive the first 6 weeks, lots of fighting, you know, if not, you know, fighting with guns on a daily basis, certainly encountering IEDs on a daily basis. And the conditions there were pretty primitive in 2009. I mean, I had to steal the engineer convoy had an earth mover on it, and I had to flag them down and steal it to get them to push some dirt berms for my guys to have a little cover, to give you a sense of what it was like. But things kind of, you know, we made some pretty good inroads. One, kind of Taliban in those first 6 weeks, and then two, by earning the trust of the people. So it was very much a night and day difference by the time we left.
Right. Now, people are going to think we prepped for this. What is written on the inside of every Port of John that Marines have ever been stationed at?
Wagner loves cock.
And I don't know who he is or she, but it happened. We were in Haiti for 2 days and it showed up on the inside of the porta potties. I don't know how it happens. Every porta potty I've ever been in that is at a U.S. Marine position. Everyone.
It's
impressive. I'm impressed. I'm not even upset. We don't know. He or she is a legend, but apparently there's something that Wagner loves. And we'll leave that at that. So, JR, I think that really gave us a flavor for your experience, you know, thinking 2009. So we're going to fast forward a little bit. Look, both you and I are fancy ourselves, you know, current events nerds and like paying attention to what's going on. Obviously, and we've discussed past couple of weeks, you know, the debacle that's going on there and that was previously going on. And I remember you and I on the phone. Boy, imagine if you got that order to be the platoon commander. You will be the final platoon off the deck. I mean, thank God it didn't happen, but I thought some Marine's going to have to shoot a civilian to keep him away from the plane. I don't know how it didn't happen, but it didn't. So, you know, kind of weave in your experience there, having been boots on the ground with what you've seen on the news, with your interpreter you're in touch with. What are like current concerns, things that you would be concerned about that if they put you back in one of the roles you filled there in the D.C. area in your final couple of years in the Marine Corps, what would you be talking to people about? What concerns you right now, next 90 to 120 days, about what has happened recently in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I mean, most immediately, you know, I'm concerned about getting any American citizen or any green card holder out of there, to say nothing of our allies and, you know, their family members who, by, you know, sticking their necks out and working with us at a time when we really needed them, you know, have now made themselves very vulnerable to the Taliban's reprisal, which, as far as I can tell, is, you know, is ongoing. So that's one. You know, this other issue is kind of a lesson we learned after the invasion of Iraq, which is about, if we don't secure weapons caches during our advance, you know, those will come back to haunt us. And so we've certainly seen quite a bit of that lately in footage. And I'll tell you, not all of it, I think, is as concerning as it might meet the eye. You know, so a warehouse full of 20-year-old M16 A4s, not great to give those to the Taliban. But at the end of the day, that's not really moving the needle. But then there are other things. You know, there's lots of armored vehicles. There are, you know, helicopters. There are light attack aircraft we developed for them. Now, maintenance and spare parts that the Taliban is just not going to be able to sustain. But a few things that really concern me that are, you know, now going out, not only among the Taliban, but I'm sure our enemies in Iran and China, night vision and thermal optics. And I even saw around, I believe it was the Kunduz airport, looked like they picked up a 5-pack of Scan Eagle drones.
Tell us what those are.
So these drones are, you know, unmanned aircraft. They're about the size of a kitchen table. These aren't like some of the other drones you may see, you know, in media or pop culture that can shoot a Hellfire missile. These are unarmed, but they were an important part of our intelligence game. And I feel pretty comfortable talking about these things because I don't know all the, you know, classified technical details. But one of my immediate concerns is, you know, if these end up in the wrong hands, it's not just the design itself, but people will be able to exploit how we command and control these things.
Right.
And that's a big problem.
And I'll tell you this.
I'm sorry to jump in real quick. Well, just my one question. Is there a chance, and this is coming from a guy that went to culinary school, so yeah, not exactly the Naval Academy, but I'm just kidding. I mean, I know that the Afghans are going to need cash. There's always a need of money. Is there a chance that they would actually just sell that to China and China can just reverse engineer that, or they already have that technology, or am I just overthinking this whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, China certainly has some similar technology, but I'm concerned, you know, I'm concerned about some of the systems within it they might exploit. Might be, you know, that might make us vulnerable in some way. And, you know, to your question, I'm not even sure they'll have to sell it. You know, China, they're trying to embarrass us. And so they'll do this, but I've seen reporting about considering forming some kind of presence on Bagram Air Base, which is, you know, of course, a place we left about 2 months ago. I don't know they'll have to.
That's totally unconscionable. And you know, Belt, I'll just comment on this. We discussed, I work for one of the largest electronics manufacturers in the world. That's not a overstatement. And I can tell you, in our expense system, in our corporate expense system, there is a line item for buying competitors' product. Back when we had a much larger consumer division, you could be authorized to walk into Best Buy and buy a competitor's product and then bring it back to our engineering lab and rip it apart. I'm sure the Chinese are doing that from a hardware perspective. Just, you know, our ability to stack processing power on semiconductors and chips is beyond theirs. They're catching up, and they do it by stealing and reverse engineering. But as JR pointed out, it's also the communications protocol and the interface. If they find a way, if they can exploit a weakness or a vulnerability to gain access either to control or just tap into our communications infrastructure, GPS infrastructure, I mean, that could be catastrophic. So JR, kind of last topic. Give me your outlook, and we're all going to play crystal ball here. Again, taking from your experience in Afghanistan, your experience, your final couple of years working the various roles in the Washington, D.C. area, and from what you're seeing on the news, people you're still in touch with, three to 5 years out, what are strategic concerns? Imagine, you know, President Kamala Harris, and she picks you out of a hat and says, you need to be either the director of the CIA or the Secretary of Defense. What are your concerns? I mean, first of all, after having a stroke at the idea of working for her, but what are the concerns that you would have? What are things that would be top of mind thinking 3 to 5 years out, not just in the next 6 months with what has occurred in Afghanistan?
So probably the most obvious concern is, you know, as, you know, Danny and I were talking earlier, you know, why do we go there and deny regime, to deny, you know, refuge for a group like Al-Qaeda. And so I think, you know, it's highly likely that environment, you know, is going to exist again there. It's not very easy for us to do anything about it, to deny that environment. You know, the second, you know, arguably more important point is, you know, in geopolitics, President Reagan, who said that weakness is provocative. And, you know, say what you will about the decision to stay or go. I think, you know, reasonable minds can disagree on that, truly. But the way and the promises we broke along the way have got to be making our very important allies in parts where allies are more important than ever. It's got to make them, you know, really scratch their head and wonder, you know, what our relationship is going to be like when it's really tested. You know, for instance, you know, what do you think if you're in Taiwan right now?
Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about that on the show in the past, that, you know, something like 40 or 50% of the world's high end semiconductors are made in one foundry in Taiwan. You think it's bad 15 years ago when the Iranians would fire a few missiles over the Strait of Hormuz and gas prices would jump a buck? Wait until the Chinese Communist Party controls that foundry. And that's kind of a wrap from my side. But JR, thank you so much for joining. And I think I'm going to kick it back over to Danny Belts. So I'm sure he's got a couple of final questions here. But thanks again, JR.
Hey, my pleasure.
If you are wondering why our audience is wondering why we did it like this, it's because it's difficult to have a three-way conference on Anchor. When you talk over anyone, it just goes completely ridiculous. That's why we kind of chose to have it separated. I'm sure somebody's out there wondering that. But I do want to talk about this. This is probably the more thing that from what happened in Afghanistan that drew my attention the most. I know that typically our leadership, 6 years for Barack Obama to meet Netanyahu, 6 years, one of our largest military allies in Israel, yet it took him only 2 months to meet Hugo Chavez and 7 months to be sitting at a baseball game next to the dictator from Cuba. I don't even mention his name. It's neither here nor there. But my point is, you know, I look at our allies a lot. And the previous administration embraced our allies early, immediately, and often, and very apparent by the relationships we had, particularly with, you know, England and Israel. England obviously has sent the second most amount of troops behind us to Afghanistan. I know that to be a fact. And I know Boris Johnson right now, their prime minister, is really happy with us. And I know right now that Israel is not either. And can you just provide some, like, these are our military allies strategically for a very, very specific reason, not only because of where they're located geographically, just because of our history with them. And I mean, should we be worried? This is a question. Should we be worried about a potential? No, I'm not going to ask that because then I'm going to put the tinfoil hat on, but I'll just ask this. Worried that our large military allies that we very well may need to lean on at one point after what we did to them in Afghanistan, particularly England and Israel, could there be like ramifications from this long term? Is this something can be mended, or is this something in your perspective that just, because as me, a normal guy that doesn't know anything, I'm looking at this like kind of a travesty. And I'm a little worried about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're 100% right to be. Look, you know, do I think England is not going to be with us the next time we need them or the next time they need us? No, I don't think so. But that's not the only measure of stress on a relationship. You know, I would look specifically, which you brought up, you know, for so long, we have been kind of the indispensable force to them in the world. You know, for so long, Israel has coordinated with us on, you know, for instance, countering the nuclear threat in Iran. Well, what decisions are they going to make when they don't think they can count on us? What decisions are they going to make when they're not even sure that, you know, we're going to keep keep communications with them confidential? You know, the risk is they decide, you know, the time has come, we have to unilaterally strike Iran, and we're not even part of that conversation. But what I think about, you know, something, you know, that has kind of resonated with me over the last few weeks is I think back a year ago to when the people of Hong Kong were dealing, you know, with basically an annexation by China. And just something that I will never forget are these protesters carrying the stars and stripes, being tear gassed, you know, by essentially Chinese or Chinese proxy authorities. And they are singing the Star Spangled Banner. And I just say, boy, you know, be ally, and I aspire to be the type of America that you guys think we are, because I think we're falling short.
Well said.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, you know, you also, I mean, we saw what just happened right now with this, I won't even say his name, it drives me nuts, but you know, the Joint Chief of Staff, you know, basically, oh, don't worry, bro. I'll if Orange Man invades, I'll let you know over here, you know, to our boy Ping and everything in China. I mean, that'd be the same as like, you know, Blinken. What an amazing Secretary of State. Like calling out Ibrahim over there in Iran saying we're gonna there's an imminent attack. Do you think that right now, and I don't wanna get too far down the rabbit hole, but do you think that right now, like with what just happened, would you classify this as treason, or is this just Fox News jargon? What just happened?
So this is as serious as you said it is. You know, treason itself, you know, treason is actually the only specific crime that is specifically defined in the Constitution. And the bottom line is, it cannot be committed during peacetime, just technically. But I think if you look at the type of behavior that, you know, lots of ordinary people would categorize as treason. Yeah, I mean, that's hard to say this isn't it, you know, and certainly within recent history, Admiral Fallon in 2008 was relieved as commander of CENTCOM General McChrystal was relieved in 2010 for offensive comments in Rolling Stone. And then General Mattis was relieved in 2013 as commander of CENTCOM just for not being on the same page as President Obama with respect to Iran. So, I mean, if those three, you know, meet the test for, you know, dismissal, hard to see how this one doesn't.
Yeah. And I agree. And I know I kind of went a little over here, but I have to ask you this last question. And this is kind of the one that is the, this is, I guess, the one curveball you're going to get thrown. But hey, you know what? It's a curveball for me. So it's 52 miles an hour and plus. You should be able to hit this one. But I don't want to, I'm not into fear porn. I'm really not. I live my life the way most normal, you know, alpha American males do. We don't, you know, stuff happens, we deal with it. I don't like to talk about the premonition of, oh, what if this and oh, what if that and all this stuff. But, you know, Tom talked, or Bench talked about the crystal ball. But with what's happening right now, what you've seen, and you spent time in an area where, you know, it's basically a harvesting of terrorists is what that is. It's like a chicken coop. Should we be worried, in your opinion, in the next couple of years about an imminent terrorist attack? I hate to ask you that question because it's not a stupid question, but I haven't been, not even in Obama's administration was I concerned about a terrorist attack. Not once. But is this something that you think the American people should kind of just be up about, or not up about, but like kind of like, hey, this is possible? Not that we can do anything about it. Or do you think that's just a bunch of hoopla and we're okay? Even though you can just cross the Mexican border and fly on the other side of the peninsula and just cross it. That's a whole nother conversation. But kind of what are your thoughts on that before we roll? I had to ask that question. I'm sorry.
No, I don't think it's a bunch of hoopla. Look, there's, you know, you've seen what ISIS has done. They have, you know, been pretty effective at mobilizing, you know, modern communication and social media to basically radicalize lone wolves. And I'm not going to downplay that threat. We've seen some pretty serious attacks from that. But it's a totally different animal when you have an overtly hostile force that is dedicated not just to, you know, exerting force within the boundaries of their territory, but exporting that to the United States. And so that, I mean, that is Al-Qaeda's bread and butter. And, you know, as we've hit on a couple times now, you know, we went to Afghanistan in 2001 to deny them that refuge. Well, here we are, you know, they've got it again. And I've seen some, you know, just in kind of open source, you know, just the same media that everybody can, you know, anyone can read. I've seen reporting from some senior defense officials who estimate that Al-Qaeda will be able to reform to the extent that they're able to perform offensive operations within the next year or two. So something to watch.
Kind of what I figured. All right, Bench, anything you want to close with? I think I talked a little more than I should have. Sorry.
I thought we were going to ask our guest here a sports question.
Oh, yeah. One thing, man. What? No, it's not that. I'm sorry. I just didn't know if you had anything you wanted to add on top of that. Do you?
No, I'm good. Let her rip.
All right, JR, what is your favorite football story?
Well, look, I was on the fence about whether to share this, and I can't call it my favorite, but certainly my most impactful football story. But the listeners deserve it. So there yes, I was, you know, the height of two-a-day season, high school football, you know, we're talking, you know, largest division within one of the southeastern states where we take football pretty seriously. And I'm going into my senior year. And something that was different about the team this year is that for the first time, a female was on the team. And now you may say, okay, well, so you had a female. She was probably a kicker, you know, no big deal. Well, the difference is this person, who we will refer to as Tambo, was not a kicker. She was an offensive tackle. This was our very first live play from scrimmage. She was on the offense scout team. I was on the first team defense. And my buddy who was playing defensive end just looked back to me and said, hey, spotlight on me this play. And the whistle blew, you know, pads hit. And all of a sudden, I mean, there was a snap that, you know, I could hear from 5 feet away and then just screaming. And so what happened is, I think this guy, you know, tried to just show what full contact felt like, but it kind of went as nature would have it go. And unfortunately, Tambo's football career ended with a tip fib that fateful day.
It kind of seemed, you know, the laws of physics. But one day I tried to wrestle my younger brother, who's got about 5-6 inches and 50 pounds on me. And as he's got my face in the, basically in the corner of a hotel, he goes, "That's why God made weight classes." That's kind of similar to why maybe women shouldn't play football. But you know what, man, I'm sorry. It's not a hate crime. You want to know why? Because she knew the when you put those pads on and you strap that, you know what's up. You know, this ain't powder puff. This is the man's game. So, yeah. Well, anyway, that's a hilarious story. I don't know if I'm going to get canceled for laughing about it or not. I get canceled for way more if you go listen back on this show. But anyway, look, JR, man, we really appreciate your service, and I mean that. Hopefully we'll have you back on, man. You'd be a good guy to come on like Dr. T, maybe quarterly. Just give us some knowledge on things that are happening around the world. We'd appreciate that if you're up for it. And once again, just appreciate and Bench, thanks for reaching out to getting your buddy on here, man. That was huge.
Of course. And we might try to work on, well, we'll save that. We'll tease that once we confirm possible other guests in the lineup. But okay. Thank you, JR, for jumping on.
My pleasure, boys.
All right, homies. We'll see you. Thanks for joining the Sports Antidote, episode number 66. Everyone has a game plan until... So what? So your back's to a wall, baby, till you get punched in the mouth, till you have to fight for your restaurant, fight to keep your season alive. Florida State's going to have to do that. And I have my full endorsement this week on the record, hardcore Florida State money line and plus the 5 points. Can't get enough of that. Once again, check the Instagram page for future plays that might be coming up at the Sports Antidote. Rate, subscribe, and review. And tell somebody about the Sports Antidote. Reach out and touch a brother. Thanks for Coach O for jumping on for a quick little hit in the beginning. Thanks to Bro Exotic, Tommy Bench, and our special guest, JR. We'll have him on again as he's pretty damn good, as you can see. Take Florida State, bitches. I'm your host, Danny Belts. Thanks for listening to the Sports Antidote. Keep it real, Antidotians. I never lose, I never lost, cause I'm the boss and never will, cause I'm still the champion. Chief one won't lose until I choose, which I won't, cause I don't retreat. I run you over like a truck.